We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway.
Get up or get out the way, Trae Young.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. I am Jason Pett. I do not have my normal co-host, Ricky O'Donnell, here today. He is off doing some things with some friends, whatever. He's bailing on the super important Bulls game against the Nets tonight, basically playing for their life. And given us as Bulls fans and what we've been through the last few years, we, of course, knew that it was going to turn out poorly. I was kind of hoping that it would go better, but the Bulls lose what was the final score? 115-107. It was never really that close. Like, it was another one of those games where, like, the Nets just kind of comfortably led for a while, and the Bulls did make some pushes in the fourth quarter. I don't know if the Nets were even, like, trying to win in that fourth quarter. Like, KD was out for a while. The Nets were running, like, a bench lineup for a while, and the Bulls were playing starters because, obviously, they were playing for their playoff lives. They got to within, I think, 5 or 6 at one point, but never quite able to get over that hump. Zach LaVine, incredible game, 41 points, 15-27 shooting, 6-11 from three. But he just did not get any help. Nikola Vucevic, rough game. I know his overall stats, he had a couple late threes to kind of keep the Bulls alive and ended up with 12-12-6, but only 5 of 18 from the field. Couldn't take advantage of a smaller Nets team that was starting Blake Griffin at center. Kobe White, he had a couple late threes, two garbage time threes, but he was 6 of 17. So he really struggled throughout much of the night. So Zach just got very little help. He was, like I said, incredible much of the night, hitting high degree of difficulty shots, but it was just a game where the Nets were on fire from the start. It really wasn't that close. The Bulls hung around kind of because of Zach's shot making. Kyrie Irving did go out he got hit in the face, took an elbow to the face from Nikola Vucevic, and left the game. So I thought maybe that could give an opening. KD didn't even have that huge of a game. He led the Nets with 21, but they had 8 guys in double figures. So very balanced scoring for the Nets here. And this loss dropped the Bulls to 29-40 on the season. And coupled with the Indiana Pacers pulling off a win against the Sixers tonight, the Sixers did not have Joel Embiid, and the Pacers had a huge fourth quarter to get a win. The Pacers are now in. The Bulls cannot catch them. The only way the Bulls can make the play-in now is to go 3-0 in these last 3 games against the Raptors, who are tanking. They put then the Nets again on Saturday. The Nets could have James Harden for that game, possibly. And then the Bucks on Sunday. The Wizards would have to go winless. They played the Hawks again tomorrow, and then they play the Cavs and the Hornets. You figure with Russell Westbrook there, even with Beal out, the Wizards will probably win at least one game. The Bulls will probably lose at least one more game. So for all intents and purposes, this Bulls season is basically over, barring a major miracle. Certainly a bummer. They did come into this game on a 3-game winning streak. They can just never get that 4-game winning streak going. It's super unfortunate. But, I mean, there's not even that much, like, to say about this game, like, in general. I mean, just the Nets, they came out on fire. The Bulls really had no answers. I didn't even think the Bulls played like that poorly. Again, they didn't shoot very well. Like, they ran decent offense. They got a bunch of good shots. Zach did hit some tough shots, but I mean, the Nets are just a better team, even without Harden, without Kyrie Irving for that second half. I mean, KD did his thing with 21-8 assists. He was just kind of letting the offense come to him. The Nets racked up like 20 some assists in the first half, and the Bulls just didn't have enough offense. They fell short, and it looks like they're going to fall short this season. Without Ricky here, I do have my guys, Kevin Farragut and Stefan Noe, with me here. I'll start with you, Kevin. Thoughts on this game? Thoughts on basically, I guess, this Bulls season? I know you've obviously been on this pod a lot with us here talking. Just where's your head at tonight after this loss basically put the nail in the coffin for the team?
Well, I said the last time I was on the show that the season was over. I think that is, it's not officially true yet, but it feels more and more true all of the time. I will say that they didn't rope me completely back in because I knew that what the odds were. But the Bulls stretch when Zach came back from getting COVID and finally looked like his ankle had healed up. And they won those three games in a row. That gave me some hope for next year. This year has obviously been, kind of not what we really hoped for. I think we going into the year, we all hoped for a pretty big improvement just by virtue of getting rid of Jim Boylan and some meaningful development of the young guys. I think Kobe had a season where he was probably slightly worse this season, but they were trying and doing different things. I think if he had just been in the scorer role, he might have looked better or looked like an improved player this year. But can't really know that. But I think they figured some things out with him. Lowry, again, did not improve. Basically the same guy as he's been for 4 years now. Hasn't really changed as a player meaningfully since his rookie season. Wendell, I don't think really improved this year. And even since he's been in Orlando, kind of looks like the same guy. And so, yeah, there wasn't really a lot of development. I think Thad looked a lot better because they used him a lot better. But I think that what we expected coming into the season and what the season ended up being were very different things. The midseason trade to kind of reshuffle the deck and to go all in on Zach LaVine's prime, I think is kind of the story of the season. And I think, it's very different than what we all expected, I think. I think a lot of us were looking at the young guys as the pieces that we were going to be building around, and that Zach maybe was a trade chip to put a better roster around those guys, and it was actually the opposite. So I think that it's a bit disappointing in that sense, but I'm very happy with Zach LaVine's season. He was great tonight in a must-win game. He didn't get any help, which is, again, kind of the story of the season. I'm excited to see a full season of Vucevic and Zach and whomever Arturis and Mark Eversley are able to put it around those guys to make a better fit.
Before we go to Steph here, I guess the Bulls have Zach and Vooch. You would hope they'd make some more moves. What would be your expectations going into next season? Do you think? We talked about this on our last pod, me and Ricky. Like, I think the Bulls, they should be a playoff team next year. I was like trying to like, if they have an 82 game season, I said like you would hope for like minimum like 40, maybe 5 wins, like at a minimum. That's obviously not knowing what other moves they might make. Like, if you mentioned like having the hope for some of these games have shown for next season, obviously not as much tonight, but like, even if they don't make any, like, say they don't make any, like, drastic moves, but they make some moves around the margins, like, what would be your expectations going into next season?
I think you would expect them to be better. Obviously, I think the Zach and Vooch two-man game is really good. I think that expecting 45 wins might be, I guess if we're talking 82-game season versus now.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what the equivalent of 29 and 40 is on an 82-game scale, and it's escaping me right now. I used to be so good at math. I am not as good as I used to be. But in any case, I think that, like, that's still a pretty significant jump without roster improvements, and I get that Vooch is an improvement. Vooch is, like, probably maybe like a plus three, plus four player per 100 possessions. And I think Wendell was probably something like, plus one, maybe plus, yeah, about plus one, I would say. So I think the difference between those two players, per 100 is probably like 2-3 points. And that, like, just making that change on its own for the whole season isn't enough to make like a, you know, 10 game leap in the win column. So you'd need improvements from Kobe. You'd need fairly significant improvements from Pat Will, and you'd have to have some really good moves around the margins. And then there's like the whole cap situation. It's going to be complicated for them to make improvements without also losing guys that were contributors this year. So I don't know. I mean, 45 wins is, I mean, it's obviously the goal, and that's what they're shooting for. They're trying to be a middle of the pack playoff team, which I'm fine with. Like
the Knicks, you're like, you're hoping that they do like the Knicks did this season, I guess, basically. Like, that's similar, like, track.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think that Zach and Vooch are better than, like, the two, that tandem is better than, you know, the Knicks tandem of Julius Randle plus whoever. But I think Tibbs is a significantly better coach than Billy Donovan.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the idea, right? Is that you try to max out your guys' primes, the stars that you have. Hopefully you can get yourself to being competitive for a home playoff series. And then, you know, maybe in a couple of years of being a competitive playoff team, you can attract another star when the salary cap aligns. And I think that's got to be the hope. But also, I mean, it's fine to just like want to have a team that wins more games than it loses and plays meaningful games in the playoffs. Like, that's a fine thing to aim for. I think that people that are championship or bust are very misguided, because one, you can build a championship team through the middle that way. I mean, that's what the Raptors did. It's what the Dallas Mavericks did. It's, you know, a bit harder, but like, also the Nets built what is their championship team by building a competitive team in a glamour market, and counting on stars to come want to be part of that culture. And so, you know, there's lots of different ways to do it. And I think with the lottery odds being what they are, and with the Bulls having traded away their lottery picks, like, it doesn't really, it's not like the tanking isn't, like, I think, the best way to build anymore. I think that the way that they've changed the lottery odds, really makes that, a much more dangerous proposition, to the extent that it was ever, you know, kind of a sure thing to try to win through the lottery.
Yeah, absolutely. And just now that you brought up the lottery odds, I will bring that up. The Bulls are in the number 8 slot right now. That is a 26.3% chance to keep that top 4 pick that they have traded to Orlando. 6% chance at number 1 overall. The Raptors are 2 games, whatever, ahead of them, behind them, or however you want to say it. The Bulls play the Raptors on Thursday. The Raptors are tanking. I would guess the Bulls beat the Raptors on Thursday, most likely. So the Bulls will probably stay at 8th. The Kings are a game and a half up, two loss difference in the loss column. I can't speak English here. So it looks like the Bulls are probably going to stick in this eighth spot, 26.3%, 6.0% for number 1. Let's go to Steph here. Thoughts on, I guess, tonight's game, or even just this last stretch of games, and again, looking towards the future here, if you've seen anything with what Billy's done, with what Zach Vooch and Kobe have done, and just like how you see this projecting out into the future.
Well, I thought they played pretty good tonight. I mean, you have to keep in mind that the Nets are a really good team. If you look on various gambling sites, they're the number 1 team for like odds of winning the championship. They're actually like more than twice as favored as the next closest team, the Lakers. So the Bulls had to play, I mean, pretty much a perfect game, and they finally got a bad game from Vucevic, who's been extremely steady since they got him in this trade. It's just really unfortunate timing, but just to hang in there with him, what was he, like 5 of 18 or something? I mean, he just couldn't make a shot, so to even make it close, I thought, was about as good as you could hope for again. Yeah, and I wanted to answer one of the questions you posed to Kevin about just what I think of this team next year. I think that's where most people want to focus at this point. Yeah. I mean, 45 wins you posed to Ricky. I think that that's pretty reasonable. Like, if you look at, I was looking it up while Kevin was talking, their net rating since the trade is like a minus 1.4. So that corresponds in an 82 game season to about 37 wins. But you have to keep in mind that they were missing Zach for most of those games, you know? And then also they didn't play particularly well in the beginning of that trade because they had zero practice time. So I think that they've played incrementally better and better, especially like tonight. I thought that, you know, like their defensive performance in the first half was just by like how many points they gave up. It wasn't very good, but I thought they were actually, I mean, the Nets were just, they're such a good team at hitting tough shots. So a lot of those shots that they were hitting were contested. I thought the Bulls played pretty well, and they've definitely made a lot less mistakes just in terms of like totally missing assignments than they did right after the trade. And of course, there was a streak of whatever, like three games prior to this one where they held opponents to less than 100 points. I mean, if you look at their defense, it's really good. It's like entering this game, it was 13th in the league, which I think nobody would have expected when they were, you know, very solidly in like the bottom third of the league for most of the beginning of the year. So I think that, yeah, they've definitely trended in the right direction. I mean, you always take that with a grain of salt with these Bulls teams because the ends of these seasons are just so wonky and we see so many crazy things. And oftentimes that does not carry over into the next season. But I think that there actually are reasons to think that those positive trends will carry over just because like the Bulls have been doing a lot of different stuff schematically too. They've been doing a lot of different stuff with rotations. They've just had tons of different personnel. So when there's like a actual reason that you can point to for the changes in the numbers, then I think that's like you can have a little bit more faith that it's not just like random luck or like you know, teams throwing out their scrubs or whatever, just like weird, yeah, you know, like not competitive, like no playoff implications basketball. So I think that is like a, all of these things, you know, the fact that they A, have not played terribly since the trade, B, that it was like without Zach LaVine, C, they're going to have like an actual time to implement strategies. Like these guys haven't practiced like barely at all. And then D, like they have even been improving, like even without having all this practice time. I think that's all like pretty positive indicators that they can definitely, like, I think their floor is probably like a 37 win mark. And I think that it's pretty reasonable that they can get to like 45 wins, especially, you know, they are going to improve the team too. And free agency, I mean, they're going to dump like Felicio. They already dumped all these like crappy guys that were on the end of the bench, like Luke Kornet and Hutchinson that wasn't doing anything. So yeah, I think that they, I mean, I think they made the trade to be like a top six team in the East. So that should definitely be the goal.
Yeah, I would agree. And I had no idea that the Bulls were actually had gotten that high in defensive rating. I'm looking at right now at NBA.com that they're 14th. I know some other places have different numbers, but yeah, I mean, so the Bulls are a mediocre defense this year. I hadn't really been keeping up on that, and I had no idea. I know like these last couple games have definitely helped because, like you said, they've been playing a lot better. They held these three straight games under 100 points, but yeah, okay. So Bulls middle of the pack team, their defensive rating ranking is better than their offensive rating, which is kind of interesting and not, something I did not even realize. So yeah. So obviously a lot of people, like Kevin was talking about the championship or bust thing. And like, I mean, obviously we've talked about that and I mean, it'd be great if the Bulls can get like a high, if they get lucky in the lottery and they get it like another star to go with them there. But like, I think after 4 years, just like, of, I mean, losing basketball, I've said this stat multiple times that the Bulls have gone four straight years now since trading Jimmy Butler without actually being over 500. I hope for God's sake that that ends next season. The Bulls can actually get over 500. I just want to see a competitive team. I tweeted this out like a week or two ago. I think after the Knicks beat the Bulls' ass, like the Knicks have been such a joy to watch as just like a team. I know the Bulls will have higher expectations next year than the Knicks did coming into this year. But like when you just have a team like that, young team on the rise, I know the Bulls will be a bit more veteran heavy with Zach and Vooch, but like, I just like want to be able to watch consistently good basketball. And like, we saw it at times this year, like the first half of the year when Zach was like really going off all the time, like there were some fun moments and some fun games. They just didn't really consistently win. They came close. Then, like, leading up to the trade was brutal. Like, they had some really bad losses. And then, obviously, after the trade, everything was kind of a mess. I think, Steph, you brought up, like, the practice time thing. I really do think, like, that is, like, just getting a full training camp after making some more personnel moves. Full training camp, hopefully next season back to basically normal. Like, all whatever, fans back in the stands fully, having actual practice time. If they make some savvy moves, whether they're big, whether they're small, like, I really do think that will help this team, because I do think the Levine Vucevic duo just can be really dangerous. And we did see some of that. We even saw some of that with Kobe as well. I know Kobe did not play well tonight. We obviously have been very frustrated with Kobe. I know both of you guys have been frustrated with him all season, but like, I feel like the last couple of games, I guess tonight he did have a few really ill-advised drives where he was getting packed by like Katie and Nick Claxton at the rim. But I feel like he played a bit more under control lately, at least somewhat. At least I don't know what you guys think about that, but playing more as that catch and shoot role. Tonight he was not hitting as much the catch and shoots as much, but just like playing off Vucevic. I think, Steph, you tweeted this, just like just when they were pounding the ball into Vuce, and you saw like the Nets when they were going to double team and Kobe just spotting up off him and like being and Vuce is a patient player in the post and he makes passes out, and those are the types of looks that he can take advantage of. And I mean, that's a pathway to him being a useful player if the Bulls do keep him around. Ricky brought that up on our last pod. Just like, if he's just gunning threes and if he can get that 3-point percentage up into the high 30s, like, that's a way for him to at least stick around the league for a while. Steph, if you want to say thoughts on Kobe and how he's played lately, because I know that's obviously been a big thing. He's been playing at least a little better, even if tonight he wasn't as good.
Yeah, I think Kobe is never going to be a playmaker. He's not going to be a guy that creates shots for other people on the court. But like you said, I mean, Billy Donovan said this the other day, that their offense is predicated, and this is all NBA offenses, it's a simple concept, it's just predicated on somebody on the team drawing two defenders. And then once that happens, you get the defense off balance, you find the open man. So all Kobe needs to do is literally just throw the ball to Vuce on the block, which, yeah, I tweeted out a play where he did that on a out of bounds play. Wait for the help to come, because if you single cover Vuce, I mean, he's going to score. So teams have to bring help. And then, all he has to do is catch the ball and shoot it. And yeah, you guys have talked about this pretty at length on your podcast. Like, that should be his role, right? That's what he's good at. I looked it up during the game. He's like a 38% shooter this year on catch and shoot threes, which is pretty good on very high volume, shooting like five per game. Same thing with when he's playing with Zach, you know, just hand Zach the ball, like, get the hell out of the way and wait for Zach to collapse like five guys. Cause every time Zach drives, like, it's a whole sea of people that are coming after him, and then just catch the ball and shoot it. That's it. I mean, it's really not that hard. And, every time that they have asked him to do something beyond that, it's been pretty disastrous, but that's fine. You know, like, really all that they need from him is, they don't have a lot of guys that are like very good catch and shoot 3-point shooters like that. So that is very valuable for them, and they need people like that. That's the one skill they need if they're going to have people slotting in with Zach and Vuce, because you want those guys with the ball in their hands most of the time. So I think that's a perfect role for him. I think it doesn't make any sense to ever ask him to try to play make, and he could be very good in that role.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Kev, have you warmed up to Kobe at all these last couple weeks where he's played at least a little better? I don't, unless this is just like him doing the same thing as last year where he caught fire at the end of the year, and then just like next year will be the same, like inconsistent stuff. Do you think he's maybe found something here with Zach and Vooch, if any of this will translate over?
I've been pretty critical of Kobe, but I don't have any problem with Kobe the person, and his play style has frustrated me at times, but it's really hasn't been his fault. Like, he caught fire at the end of the season last year because he was primarily just getting buckets, and like that is what Kobe White is good at. Like, he can really shoot the ball, and he can push pace in transition and get points that way. But you know, dribbling in the half court, decision making in the half court, maybe he gets better with those things over time, but like, I am very bearish on his ability to get to being like a real plus guy on those things. If he could get to even just being, you know, league average as a guard on half court decision making, when he makes a dribble, that would be huge. But that'll take some time. And in the meantime, you still want to be winning games. And if Kobe wants to get playing time, I think like the right thing is for him to develop that stuff in the off season. In the meantime, when he's on the court, he needs to be catching and shooting, like, you mentioned, and like Stefan was talking about. It's not so much that I think that like he is just doing what he did last year and going off against teams that don't care. I think what happened last year is that he was doing the things that he's good at last year down the stretch. And this year he's kind of been put back in that same sort of role where he's just being asked to score and not even, really do very much self-creation. And I think like the other thing that I was going to say is that to Stefan's point about like how, you know, pretty much all NBA offense is based on creating an advantage that draws the attention of two defenders and then moving the ball to the open man. I think that's one thing that like next year I would like to see, with a full off season, I would like to see Billy come in with a plan to stagger Zach and Vooch. They do get plenty of time together. Because that two-man game should be really deadly, but like there shouldn't be. You have two all-stars now, and two all-stars that draw doubles consistently because they are both so dangerous scoring the ball. You need to leverage that as much as possible, and that also helps keep Kobe in the right size role of being more of a catch and shoot guy off of like as a play finisher off of the advantages created by your two real stars. Now, some of that will depend on what they do in the offseason in terms of who they're able to get. If they got somebody like Spencer Dinwiddie, like he's a guy that in the right situations can create advantage and draw, maybe not draw double teams, but collapse a defense with his drive and with the threat of his pull-up shooting. He's a little similar to Zach in terms of strengths and weaknesses, but having two of those guys is not necessarily the worst thing. I think he's, obviously a bit better defender than Zach, but, they're both better with the ball in their hands. And Zach's obviously a much better shooter, but Dinwiddie's, not a bad shooter either. If they only sign like role guys to fit around Zach and Vooch, you got to stagger their minutes, I think, more so than was done for large portions of the post trade part of the season.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of the like role guys and other young players in this Bulls team, let's talk about Pat here for a second. And I want to ask you two the question that our guy C-Red Fred asked me and Ricky on our last pod. And that was, after their respective rookie seasons, who are you higher on, Patrick Williams or Lauri Markkanen? Obviously Lauri has turned into a disaster. I think we all think that he is a goner. I guess I'll just bring up tonight, he hit a few threes, but again, I mean, you just kind of 11 points, 4 of 8 shooting, 3 of 7 from three. He did absolutely nothing else. He's playing a bunch of small forward again, just weird stuff. Like, and my answer was Lowry to this question, because I was super high on Lowry after his rookie season. I feel like he played pretty well under Fred. He showed a lot, and then he just never got better. I think Kevin, I think you mentioned this at the top. It's like, he just has not gotten better. He's like, I mean, he's arguably he's gotten worse. Like, he's now basically just purely like a spot up shooter. Like, he gets open a few times, like running off screens. Like tonight, the Nets fell asleep a few times and he got wide open shots off threes, but he literally does nothing else. Just hasn't been there, and which is so disappointing. And we look at Pat, like Pat had a bad game tonight. He was basically invisible. He hit one mid-range shot and hit one three-pointer off a brilliant pass from Daniel Theis. He had 5 points, only took two shots in 23 minutes. He was a minus 16, did have two blocks, but also two turnovers, only one rebound, no assists, no steal. So basically a disaster of a night for Patrick Williams. And obviously the big talking point with him has been just like he's got to be more aggressive. They got to get him more involved in the offense. But, yeah, so let's – first of all, just like answer that question. Steph, who were you higher on after the rookie season, Pat or Lowry?
I was really high on Lowry, especially after he dominated that Eurobasket tournament. So probably him, but I'm also very high on Pat Will. But I want to ask you guys something too. We're kind of talking about this in Mark K's Bulls HQ Discord about Billy as a player development guy this year. And I kind of feel like he's done Patrick Williams a disservice. Also Coby White, just like throwing these guys into roles that they're not at all prepared for. Like, I think Coby playing well right now has nothing to do with the fact that he was a left play point guard in the beginning of the year. Like, I think that really hurt his confidence actually. And he didn't learn anything in particular from just like getting destroyed in that role. And now, you know, he's been a lot better just because they've changed his role, not because of that experience. And then with Patrick Williams too, like, I mean, he was guarding Kevin Durant tonight and Durant was just roasting him. He's guarded all these really top scorers. And I mean, he's had times where he has looked okay, but for the most part, he's looked overmatched. And again, like, I'm really high on Patrick Williams. I think he's going to be a very good player. I'm very excited about him, but just doesn't make sense to me to keep on trotting him out against like the best players in the NBA, you know, like literally, every time the Bulls play somebody in the top 20, it's like, okay, Pat, like go score on them and go shut them down. And I just think it would make way more sense to play him in second units against bench players that are not as talented so that he can figure out ways to score. I mean, he's already taking a huge leap going from high school 2 years ago to college last year to now he's playing against like the 450 best players in the world. And actually, he's only playing against like the 20 best players in the world the way the Bulls are using him. So I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not a guy that thinks that like players just get better by throwing them out there. I know some people believe that, but I believe that it needs to be a lot more structured. And yeah, I'm curious to hear what you guys would think if you think Billy's doing the right thing there, or you think he would be better served playing against weaker matchups.
I'll just bring it. First of all, I know Ricky has, I feel like, has criticized Billy for using Pat, and he said he's always talked about how he thinks Pat needs to have it offensively, at least, just like do a little bit more with the ball, not just be like an off-ball spot-up guy, and how that's kind of just like turned him. I mean, some of it's just him. He does have to be more aggressive, but how just like Billy's used him hasn't really been the best. In those comments that allegedly Billy is like telling him not to shoot mid-range, even though like, he's really good at it. Like, he's got a really nice mid-range shot, and he's been kind of trying to coach that out of him, supposedly, I think, something like that. Like, maybe not the best. And I mean, with these other guys, I mean, I think Kev was kind of going through the guys at the start of the year. Like, guys just really haven't gotten better. So, like, you do have to, like, question, I guess, the player development this season. Like, obviously, Zach has taken a leap, but I don't think that has anything to do with Billy Donovan. Lowry hasn't gotten better. Wendell didn't get better. Like, Coby hasn't really gotten that much better either. So I think it's at least fair to wonder on that. And with Pat himself, I mean, he's literally, like you mentioned, he literally has guarded like the best guys. And I mean, he was guarding Devin Booker that one game. Like, and I mean, he should not be guarding star shooting guards. Like, that's just like that's putting him in a legit bad position. And like, Devin Booker was roasting him all night long. Like, it's tough enough to guard, obviously, like the big wing guys. That's probably more his speed, like down the road. But like, they're also having him guard Devin Booker. I mean, part of that is also probably just like the Bulls roster construction, not actually having like legitimate. I think Garrett Temple might have been out that game, so like they just like didn't have many guys that they could actually throw on him. So it's basically, here you go, Patrick Williams, take these assignments, like you said, Steph. So that probably has not helped either. But Kev, I'll throw it over to you now for this.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. I've been pretty critical of Billy on a lot of things, and I'm tempted to be critical of him here as well, because like I was saying earlier, like there wasn't really a lot of development I don't know that I can really hold Lowry not developing because
he might whatever
against him. And then like Wendell, I don't know, man. Wendell is like, and I'm starting to worry that Pat might be a little bit like this. But Wendell is just would get in his head so easily. And you know, part of coaching obviously is being able to reach different player types. But you know, at some point it is on the player to be able to be a next play kind of guy. But I will say that I don't like that, the Bulls, have, you know, basically tried to force Kobe into being a point guard when he's, you know, anybody that's watched this team a lot, could tell you that Kobe does not have a point guard skill set. I think anybody that had watched Kobe his entire, high school and college career could tell you that he wasn't really a point guard. He's a bucket getter, and that's fine. There's a place for that guy in the league, especially when he's as good at catch and shoots as Kobe is. So that just seemed really misguided to me. I mean, I guess I understand it to a certain extent because he was a seventh overall pick, but like also the whole point of bringing Karnišovas was kind of to not get caught with the sunk cost fallacy of like you invested these resources in this player, try to force him to be better than he is, like, or be something that he's not just because the roster needs it. And I feel like that's kind of what's happening to Pat too, is like, they need a wing stopper. So let's put the 19-year-old rookie out there because he's the closest, physical facsimile we have to a wing stopper. And it's just like, he's not ready for that. And I mean, fortunately it doesn't seem like he's, you know, lost a ton of confidence, at least defensively, but like, I don't know if that getting consistently roasted defensively has impacted his confidence on offense, because he's had way too many games where he just does not get shots up, and his usage rate for a guy with, you know, the talent that he has offensively, like he's got little flip shots. He's got, you know, the strength to muscle smaller players down low at times. He's got a pretty good handle for his size. He can shoot threes, and his little pull-up game is pretty effective. And, you know, he has flashes of a star in terms of offensive profile, but he's not going to develop those things taking, you know, four or five shots a game because he's playing with the starters and having to play against players that are just way better than him right now. And I agree with what Stefan was saying about how you don't just throw guys out there and expect them to get better. Like, that's not really how development works. And I feel like I've said this before, but like with, I think you put guys in a role, and as they develop their skill set, you let them expand the role. But to get them floor time, you have to put them in a sort of structured environment that allows them to excel at what they're good at. Like, when Jimmy Butler was a rookie, all the Bulls did was have him hang out in the dunker spot and cut and play really hard defense. And so he got lots of easy dunks and got fouled a lot and, you know, earned his keep on defense. And, you know, he wasn't playing starters minutes. He was playing bench minutes. And, you know, obviously Pat was a much more important draft pick, being number four pick versus Jimmy was number 30. But it's just to say that like he's 19. You don't want to like break his confidence by throwing him out there against LeBron, Kawhi, and KD and just letting him get torched. Even though those guys did say some nice things about him, you know, it still hurts to watch bucket after bucket go in. And also just from the perspective of like, they clearly wanted to win games this season. Like throwing a 19-year-old rookie to the Wolves was probably not the move if you actually wanted to win games.
It was very interesting that he did start the year as the starter. Like, we all assumed that Otto Porter Jr. would be the starter at small forward, and the only one with Patrick Williamson has kept him. I think kept him there the whole year. Has he started every game this season?
He missed one game.
If he hasn't, it's okay, but it's been like close otherwise. I think every game he's played, he's basically started. So like they benched Kobe and Wendell. They bench other guys and bench Lowry. Yeah, okay, yeah. He's played 68 games now, and he has started every single one of them. So it is interesting that all these other lineup changes that they've made, that they have kept him in that starting lineup. He's played 28 minutes a game. If you look at like his shooting like percentages, like they've stayed like pretty consistent all across the entire season. Obviously the volume has been super low and that's been a problem, but like he's been right around this like 48, 49% overall and like 37, 38, 39% from three. Like, so he's been like super consistent. Just a matter of just getting more out of him for sure.
To answer the other question that Stefan pivoted us to this question from, about who I was more into, I think that I probably am still slightly higher on Pat than I was on Lowry, just because I wasn't super high on Lowry as a draft pick, and I was still bitter about the Jimmy Butler trade. I mean, that hasn't changed, but I was a little bit higher on Pat after the draft. I didn't know a lot about him coming in because I just didn't expect him to go four. But, you know, listening to people like PD Webb talk about him, PD is at Above the Break 3 on Twitter. Very good draft follow if you guys don't follow him. But he, I think, came either on this show or on Mark's show and talked about Pat and had written a bunch about him and said that, you know, if he was the Wolves, he might have considered taking him number one. So, you know, from that perspective, it's a bit disappointing just from a developmental perspective, because it really wasn't a great year. But like, also all rookies are varying degrees of bad typically, especially 19-year-old rookies. So I'm trying not to overreact to it too much. I would like to see him used a bit differently, unless he comes back with like, you know, a completely different set of skills after the off season, which he might, because he is a very hard worker. And even between his season at Florida State and the start of the season, he came in with some additional, I think, tightness to his handle, and his jumper was definitely more consistent. And I think he had sped up the release, which he still needs to speed up a bit more.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. We've been going for a while here, actually, longer than I thought. I really don't have much else here. If anyone else wants to make a comment, I see our guy Mark in there. If you want to come up here, if you want to speak, I have not much else. Obviously, again, talking about the Bulls' loss and the Bulls basically being on the brink of elimination here. Again, they have to win out, and the Wizards have to lose out for the Bulls to make the play-in game, and the Wizards play the Cavs in a couple of days, so that's probably not going to happen. The Bulls will probably lose at least one more game as well. So I basically got nothing else here. Kevin and Steph, thank you guys so much for joining me up here and kind of filling in for Ricky. I believe, like I said, the Bulls do play on Thursday against the Raptors, and the Raptors are tanking. I believe the Wizards play against the Hawks tomorrow, so the Bulls could be eliminated by the time they play. The Bulls play the Raptors on Thursday. I think we are probably going to do another one of these locker room pods on Thursday after the Raptors game, whether the Bulls are eliminated or not. It might as well, if they are, wrap up the season and all that fun stuff. But maybe they'll still be alive going into the weekend. We will see. But thanks for the listeners, Kevin and Steph. Thanks again for you guys for coming up here for us here at Cash Considerations. If you missed some of this, you want to go back and listen later, this will be up in our feed later tonight. As always, you can find us wherever you listen to your pods: Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. Shout out to the Blue Wire Network, as always, with a bunch of other great pods all across the Blue Wire Network. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls_J. So thanks again, guys. Bull season looking like it's dead, but we'll stay podcasting, and hopefully this will be an exciting offseason. They make these big moves at the trade deadline. AK said he wasn't done, so even if this season is ending on a disappointing note, hopefully we have a fun offseason to look ahead to. We'll see if the Bulls will keep this draft pick, assuming that in the lottery, and they're number 8 right now. So we'll talk to you guys next time, guys, and have a good night.